We take a single episode of a science fiction TV series and overanalyze it to within an inch of its life. This is the Fusion Patrol Podcast. Welcome to the discussion. Hello and welcome to another episode of Fusion Patrol. I'm Eugene.
And I'm Ben.
And tonight we're looking at the Space 1999 episode, The Last Enemy. Alpha drifts into a unique solar system. A solar system with two planets. But not just that, they're two planets permanently on opposite sides of the sun. Scientifically designated by the Alphans as the planet on the left and the planet on the right. The two planets are highly advanced civilizations that have learned to build spaceships, devastating weapons, but have apparently never discovered how to use gravity to curve an object's path around the sun, because they exist in a permanent state of war, but also stalemate, each unable to wage war on the other because they can't see each other until Alpha comes along. The planet on the left sends a ship to the moon. Koenig launches an attack because he's afraid of them, but their ships and defenses are all easily disabled by the aliens. The left planetanians land on the moon and launch an attack on the planet on the right. A mayhem ensues with Alpha in between and under attack from both sides. The planet on the left is destroyed, and the captain, Diani, the only survivor, comes to Alpha seeking help. Koenig takes pity on her and tries to negotiate a temporary truce while the moon passes through the solar system. It is a ruse on behalf of the left planetanians, and their ship wasn't really damaged, and they launch a surprise attack. Koenig then blows them up in a show of good faith to the right planetanians, and they destroy their missiles, and the moon goes merrily on its way. The end. There's actually some very interesting things about this episode. But there were things about it that were just beyond staggeringly painful. As you may have said. So what did you think of the episode?
Oh, do I have to answer this?
Well, you know, just for the sake of having it on record.
How's that?
Well,
I mean, I developed a migraine from feeling my IQ drop.
I did have to watch this in two settings.
Gotta leave it.
I had to stop it in the middle and just go, I'm having an existentialist crisis here. you know, for considering,
better than having a stroke while watching it.
Good point. I do realize that they name one of the planets, and I don't remember if they named both of the planets. I know named the planet on the right was called Delta.
Right.
But I don't see anywhere in my notes that they named the planet on the left. It's still just the left planet.
Yeah.
Which, you know, considering that they can just fly by a planet and the computer will go, planet code name Terra Nova, you think that it could do something better than planet code name the planet left? On the left. Which we didn't see it do that, so to be fair, Kano is just the one referring to them as the planet on the left and the planet on the right. Completely, you know, ignoring the fact that left and right are artificial constructs of viewing it on their view screen.
Well, that, I mean, it appeared that they were approaching the solar system at a 90-degree angle to the planets and the sun.
That too. That part was just, I was having real problems with it. The difference between this and other episodes where they've got such precise names that they come up with these, and then this one they're just like that one on the left, that one on the right, and then the fact that the aliens can't shoot at each other.
Oh, this really was beyond stupid.
It really was.
I mean, okay, yeah, you could always use the gravity of the sun to kind of, you know, help guide and aim your. I mean, if you do
that all the time. That here with just our space probes.
Absolutely. So if you've got interplanetary travel, which apparently they do have, then
I assume that they can get to each other's planets.
I would assume so. Then it's got to be really easy peasy in order for them to do the calculations to, you know, lob off a missile and use the gravity of the sun to really do some major damage. But no. Instead, oh, no, we can't do a thing. Oh, but here's a moon. And, of course, the first thought that runs through my head is, oh, so then why don't you just launch a ship out there into space, turn it around, and then fire on your planet, fire on the enemy.
They have the ship.
Yeah. Why does it have to be stationed on the moon in order to does it have that kind of a recoil?
What kind of war have you been fighting forever when the only time
you can't shoot each other
is when a mobile weapons platform comes floating through at random through your solar system?
I know. I know. There's just so much wrong with this. So much that we're supposed to take at face value, and it's a pretty ugly face.
Yes. And so, I mean, yeah, somebody beat this one with a stupid stick. There's a major plot component which is so utterly and completely ignored as to be unbelievable. I'm pretty sure that at no point in this episode is there any mention made of the fact that the left planetanians are all women and the right planetanians appear to be men.
Old men.
Well, we get to see the one old
practically blind guy, and that's it. Yeah, to me that felt like, oh dear, are we going to go down that stereotype?
But they didn't.
No, but they hinted at it.
That's pretty much it. It's like, yeah, we've always been at war with them. It's like, and they're on opposite sides
and why?
Of the sun, so because men and women are opposite. I'm going to name these planets Venus and Mars.
Mars, yeah,
for obvious reasons. And yet it didn't seem to be, you know, it's almost as if it was a casting decision instead of a script decision.
Well, that would make sort of sense, given that there was nothing in the story whatsoever to even talk about why they were at war.
We're just opposites, you know.
Yeah, we're just opposites. Okay, great. That's pretty narrow-minded. The fact that the one ship seems to have only females kind of imply, but again, nothing is said. So maybe it is just a simple case of that's just the way it got cast.
They didn't seem to be particularly offended by the fact that Koenig was a man.
No, not in the slightest.
She even seemed to be flirting with him. So
yeah,
it's kind of like
that.
She knew what to do with it. Which, you know, raises a whole bunch of other questions that has always been a problem with, you know, Wonder Woman and Paradise Island. Where do they, you know, do they have raiding parties on the other planet? Again, we're just reading it into it because they never actually said that. Although you look at any book on Space 1999 and pretty much universally they all say, oh yeah, the planet of the women and the planet of the men. But it's not there. It's not there in the words.
No.
To do anything other than just say, I admire the casting of the left planetanians. It's like that is definitely 1970s British buxom, I believe, is the phrase we would use there. And of course, the guy from right planetanian is. Oh, I cannot think of his name. I want to say Kevin Spacey. That's completely wrong.
No.
But he's Tobias Vaughn from The Invasion and Doctor Who. A longtime character actor on British. And I cannot for the life of me think of his name off the top of my head. But anyway, he's the one with the weird eye. He's always had a weird eye in everything. Obviously, he himself has a weird eye, which once again really impresses me about the British. That they don't have to hire perfect physical specimens for their acting roles. I mean, we're pretty shallow in the United States. Just look at any CW drama, right? I mean,
oh, everybody's gorgeous.
They're, you know, this is men, women, doesn't matter. They have to be absolutely fit. And, you know, the Hollywood movie system, et cetera, we have always been shallowly superficial about the appearance. There's very few actors that can rise above that and not be, you know, at least when they were younger, nearly perfect to get work. Because there's so many people over there wanting jobs in the heyday of Hollywood anyway.
Yeah.
And the British hire actual actors. I always like that guy. He's suitably menacing in most shows that he's in. Kevin Stoney. That name just came to me. I knew there was a reason. It sounded like,
yeah, it's the internet is an amazing thing.
It just came to me out of the ether. There was no
or Googling, out of the internet
Googling involved anyway.
Oh, you lie.
he was in a bunch of stuff over the years. I'm sure he's been in the Avengers and stuff. So our viewers will have seen him, but he doesn't get much of a part here. Just appears on a TV screen and sort of keeps both his eyes closed.
Kind of got the feeling that he was supposed to be blind, but it was hard to say.
Oh, you know, I hadn't really thought of that, but yeah, you're right. It's possible he could supposedly have been blind. I just thought maybe that was a thing that the right planetanians did.
What, squint?
Squint, yeah, keep their eyes closed. This is such a weird episode. It's not us. It's not us. This is a weird.
It is a very weird episode.
It's a weird episode. So let's in no particular order. I've got some various notes here. In the bad script writing zone, the Eagles are launched towards the left planetanians at the beginning, and they come into range. And Dione says, neutralize all eagles. And the eagles are all shut down. And my first thought was, how does she know they're called eagles?
Yes, I know. But then, hey, with everything, with all the other bits of glorious illogic that we have had, and just more than suspension of disbelief, by the time these people come along and say, you know, disable, you know, the eagles, I'm like, yeah, I can accept that. It's just more of the same.
I mean, they look like eagles. I mean, with the wings and the beaks and everything. I mean, it's a very obvious comparison. Or a turtle.
Yeah, assuming that they've got birds on their planet.
Do you think they only have female birds on their planet? Oh, get it? Birds. They only have birds.
They only have
birds on their planet. Okay. that one's free, folks, and we'll be here all week.
Be sure to tip your waiter.
Why not? So their ship is made to fake look like it's hit, which I guess that plan relies on them not actually getting hit. There's a scene in the middle of the episode where Alan is like, yeah, I don't know. It seems a little too... This is something about that ship. It's just, I don't know. And it's clear he thinks that it's not actually damaged or as badly damaged or anything like that. But nothing ever comes of it. From Alan's standpoint.
No.
Alan never tells the commander. You know, it's a conversation he's having looking out the window with a couple of people in main mission. And then we don't get it, and everybody's surprised later on when the ship turns out to be not damaged. You'd think at least Alan was going, oh, no, there was something about that ship, Commander. But he doesn't. We don't get that moment. So it seems just like, is it for the audience? Maybe we should be suspicious? But wouldn't it be better if we weren't suspicious? And then we would be caught by surprise by the duplicitous nature of the left planetanians? I think that if this guy submitted the script, we could submit a few notes back.
Oh, you think?
He could do a little bit of... Now, there's a scene in this episode where the red alert lighting is on, and the panels behind Koenig are very red. I don't know if you noticed that. And I'm sure they've been on red alert before.
I don't remember being that red.
I don't remember it being that red. That's right. It was like, wow, I like that. That's oh, it's really a good, standing out.
Yeah.
I've seen them green. I remember them being green and white, but I just apparently the way it was shot, it stood out, and it's like, oh, it's red. I like that. I wish they'd do it more obvious.
Well, it's one of the things that we've talked about that Space 1999 occasionally would do, and it's sad that they didn't do more of it, because it might, at least on an artistic sort of way, it could salvage the episode a little bit, because in the beginning we were seeing some fascinating camera angles, we were seeing some very unusual lighting, and then things started to become kind of traditional.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wasn't seeing anything really adventurous or really strong lighting. The red alert, that was a great bit. I like that. It helped set a mood, but that's just one. There wasn't enough of that. It might make the episode less painful.
red lights. This helps. Yeah. No, you're stretching pretty bad when red lights are what we.
That's what you were. Yeah, you said, hey, I like that.
I like the red lights. Okay, I admit, I like the casting of the left planetanians by and large. But again, it didn't seem to advance the plot any, so I just feel sort of cheapened that they've manipulated me in that way. I also was kind of annoyed at the looks on their faces when the last survivor comes across Downey, and they're all like, the expression's like, it's a woman. That's so condescending. They have women in positions of some authority on Alpha. This is
they do, and it's not like
appearing to be a little bit equality here.
And they have met other females of alien species. So why the big deal this time?
And my question is it not that she was a woman? Was it that she's so pretty?
No, sorry.
I'm kind of wondering if that was supposed to be what that reaction was, because I couldn't quite tell. It's like, wow, what a knockout or whatever. It seemed wholly inappropriate on the part of the Alphans. You know, I guess if she'd taken her helmet off and she had like green antenna and stuff, they would have not been surprised at all. But pretty woman and whoa. What do you think about Koenig's attitude throughout this episode? And I'll give a couple of examples. At the beginning, he goes straight to attack.
Yeah.
And even Victor calls him out. Shooting first, not quite your style, John.
And yeah, I heard that. Thought, what?
It's like, were you not here last episode? Well, I don't know if it was last episode, but within the last two or three episodes, Koenig has either gone for I will shoot first to I won't shoot first.
What is Koenig's style is the question.
There was the intransigent, no, I will not give you sanctuary, on the moon, to then being blackmailed into it, to the, shall we say, a little flirty.
Yes, thank you. I have that on my notes. Flirt.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, wait, huh?
Was that? Okay, so I get here at the end when Koenig pulls a laser on them and he's all like, no, I'm going to go over with the left planetanians and they're going to save me and you guys are all going to be here and die, haha. And I'm coming out there and the left planetanians are like, don't come out, we're not going to let you in. Yes, I'm coming out there, you have to help me. And, you know, he's pulling a scam, as we have seen him do before. Can't remember which episode, but we've seen Koenig basically bail out on everyone to convince them that it was,
right,
some sort of scam. So that part I get. That was a fake. Was the flirting a fake? Was he planning it that far in advance that he felt he had to flirt with the alien to try to get his way? I mean, she was obviously trying to insert her wiles on him, too.
Yeah, but if that was the case, I didn't really see a payoff off that.
I didn't either. And I didn't see the jealous payoff that we would expect from Dr. Russell. Well, I don't like her, John. You know, I can see that, right? You know, just that sort of jealous woman attitude that they could have imposed on Dr. Russell, but they didn't. She seemed to be, well, I don't know. Did she and Victor seem to, no, she and Victor showed no personality in this episode really whatsoever.
No, not really.
You guys, they're making us work for this. They are making us work for these episodes. Moon's going to travel the orbit out of the range in 4 hours. That is booking.
Yeah. Well, it's got to travel all that space and, you know, come across a new alien civilization every week. So, yeah, it's got to be moving pretty fast.
But if that's the case, and let's do a little bit of speculation, because why not? The Earth orbits the sun at about 98 million miles. There is a thing known as a Goldilocks zone,
right,
in astronomy, where the minimum and the maximum point where your planet could have liquid water. Of course, that's going to depend on the intensity of the star.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's some other factors that come involved. But
that would determine where the Goldilocks zone is.
Right. But given that these planets have produced people who seem to have roughly the same dimensions and strengths and body aspects, we can kind of assume that these planets have the same kind of mass.
Roughly. And that roughly. They are...
So they're probably...
They both sit within the Goldilocks zone, imagine. I mean, it's they're almost like... I don't know if equidistant is the correct word, but they both, I would say, have the same distance from the sun, just on opposite sides.
So let's just, you know, shoot with this and pretend like they're roughly the same as Earth. Out 98 million, 100 million miles from the sun. So their orbit would then be a diameter of 200 million miles.
Okay.
The moon is basically passing out of a useful zone to them in 4 hours. And presumably, they weren't there too long before the left planetanians attacked them or came to their planet. So I get the feeling that they're only in this solar system for, say, maybe 8 hours?
Nope, can't be for very long. That's for darn sure.
So if they're traveling 200 million miles in 8 hours, they're really booking.
That's fast.
But it's not just that, right? That's what they're doing all the time. So all those other solar systems where they're like, oh, we only have 3 or 4 days, John, to study this planet. Like, how does that work?
It's God.
Space God, right.
Space God. Slowing the moon down so that it could spend more time there. And then, okay, we're done. Speed things up. Push them along your way.
It's kind of like those, I don't know if all our listeners are familiar with these, but when you and I were a kid, we were not one kid. We were more than one kid. When you were kids, Hot Wheels.
Yes.
Had those battery powered speed up things. They had the two rotating wheels.
Uh-huh.
That when your Hot Wheel went through it, it shot it out the track. And yep. So it gave it enough force that you could go around the track and come back around to the battery powered slingshot or power shot thing. That's what's happening here. Once they get out of those planets, Space God just hits them with the Hot Wheels thing and shoots them out again for the next one. And then they're just slowing down until they get the planet. And they go, I don't know.
Space God's got to slow them down, though. I mean, it's physics.
There was no evidence of Space God in this episode, though. I mean, apart from our joking aside, this one did not have any... just, a cautionary tale about the dangers of the war of the sexes that nobody bothered to mention. Yep. Koenig goes out in a moon buggy, supposedly.
Mm-hmm.
And they put a spacesuit and a space helmet. It's not really Koenig. It's a dupe.
It's a dummy.
It's a dummy. And they
it's an empty
drive
suit.
It out there. It's got bombs in it. I'm not sure what's holding the empty suit inflated in the buggy.
If there's a vacuum inside, if the pressure is equalized, it would neither inflate nor deflate. All they got to do is just make sure that it's got that it's just the right shape when it goes out.
All they need to do is to make sure that they seal the helmet on.
Oh, darn. It falls off.
It falls off. At the, like, Who would, if you're going to blow up a spacesuit and send it out there, on Earth would you not at least buckle the helmet down? For. And.
But it's not as funny.
It is.
And I'm saying that very sarcastically, too.
It's visually amusing in a way. They go, oh, I get it. The spacesuit's empty. But there's other ways to show us that, like a picture through the spacesuit or, you know, through the helmet. There's nothing in there. Or cut to John Koenig in an airlock somewhere using his comm link to say, okay, I'm coming over now. And then go, oh, I see. This is a trick. But no, they have to go for the ridiculous. This episode pains me.
It really just it's a head scratcher, no question about it.
From the I'm getting, you know, I think we're getting close-ish to the end of series one.
Are we?
I think so.
Oh God, I don't know. I don't think so. I think we still got a ways to go. I mean, I don't know. Well, they were only halfway. I have no idea.
We've got about, I think, maybe five more to go. And of course, this is production order, so maybe this is one of those, like, yeah, we got to start shooting something. So I guess we run with a script. But I just don't. This is what gives the impression that a lot of science fiction shows did not value the intelligence of their audience.
Oh, please. I've been saying that for a long time.
Well, but we have had episodes of Space 99, and I'm not saying that they're well executed, because they have not been well executed. That's clear going through this thing. That they have at least tried to present something that's a little bit more deep about the nature of man or our vices or our problem. I mean, they've largely unsuccessful, but they've certainly tried it. It's clear that they've certainly tried that. And here it's like they want to have a conversation about men and women in opposition to each other, but they don't. And then it's just so beyond stupid in so many ways that you just have to think that they were just doing drugs or something. I don't know.
But this is something that has been pestering me with a lot of 70s science fiction, that they just assume the audience is going to, you know, it's sci-fi. Our audience is stupid. They'll watch it.
Okay. So would you agree with this premise? Looking at two shows, Man from Atlantis versus Space 1999. Now,
Sophie's Choice.
I get the impression that Man from Atlantis was meant to be mindless entertainment for kids or young adults or whatever. I don't think that they were going for, I mean, I have heard otherwise from some of the people who worked on the show, but that it really was not meant to be deep like a Star Trek.
No, in fact, I think it was, I mean, my take on that is in retrospect, it's more of a, you know, family-oriented
lost
fantasy.
Space, kind of.
But kind of a fantasy.
Yeah. But I feel like Space 1999 puts on the airs that they want to do these things.
In the beginning, yeah.
And
and again, you know, it's something that
which
you had
worse.
Brought up. Something that you had brought up, which I think in the beginning comes off as a really good premise, but it's badly executed, and that is as our humans go off into space, the whole purpose of the show was just to show how weird space is.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, we're getting that. What sadly, unfortunately, you know, what we're getting is how dumb space really is.
Yeah. Okay, I can run with that. I can run with that. Let's see if I can make sense out of this. One of the I love parallel universe stories. Mm-hmm. I've always loved parallel universe stories. I It's just, that's like my genre of science fiction. I love that. And yet, I dislike Sliders intensely. And because the premise itself was taken so stupidly, and I can't pull up an example because I can only tolerate a few episodes of Sliders over the course of the years, and I've thankfully shut them out of my mind. But given the idea that you can have infinite number of variations of universes, they pick some really stupid ones. Uh-huh. You follow? I mean, for the purposes of telling an interesting story, we've gone to the planet where red means go and green means stop.
Mm.
Start the exciting adventure right now. And
well, that's really no different, if you think about it, to some of the zones that we saw when we were watching Fantastic Journey.
Yes.
It's really the same thing. It all became a question of, I was going to say, let's just, you know, the writers were trying to come up with something that was just completely weird. But all I can come up with that the writers had serious lack of imagination.
Yes. Okay. And that's what we've got here in this episode. It's like, oh, it'd be interesting if the men and the women, and then, or that they were into us. It's like, there's just no thought in it. You have so much you could work with. Space is strange. Yeah. Okay. Space is strange, but...
But we've had episodes already where we've seen how weird space is, and we can kind of accept it, because some very odd things are going on. I know we've got an episode coming up. It's the second to the last one of this season. And by the way, we've got 6 episodes left of season one.
That's close.
I know that one of the last ones coming up is Dragon's Domain, and that is one of the weirdest episodes ever. I mean, it's almost like a horror story.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's very, very, very weird, but it's not stupid.
Right. Well, it's, we're going to add there on that one. I mean, it has something to talk about.
Right.
I mean,
from what I remember, I've only seen the episode twice.
Oh, really?
That one. So I don't remember there being anything overtly dumb about that, but there's not very many places where they can go really, really dumb, unless you want to talk about, you know, some really bad decisions that are made by Koenig and company. But with this one, it's like the premise is dumb. Mm-hmm. The characters are acting dumb.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everywhere you go, I see dumb people.
I saw that movie, M. Night Shyamalan Ding Dong, if I'm not mistaken. There is a notion, and again, you kind of go back to the gold standard, which is Star Trek, that we go to a planet, and the planet is an allegory for a social issue.
Right.
But it's an allegory for the
social issue. But see, they already had the social issue in mind, and then created the story to go around it. Here, I don't even think they had that. I think they just had, oh, wouldn't it be cool if?
Yeah, kind of.
I mean, it feels like they're putting the cart before the horse, although in this case, the horse is just – it's like emaciated.
But what I kind of feel like is they go, well, you can do anything crazy thing. So we want – for example, you want to have an alien race that's half black and half white. And it's an allegorical thing about race relations and et cetera. And it is pretty bonk on the head. But at the same time, you know, my first time through it, I didn't see it coming. And so it's not as bonk on the head as it could be. But another episode of Star Trek that never got made was the one where Roddenberry championed this time and time and time and time again, where they went to the planet where black people were in charge and white people were their slaves. And that's I'm so glad they didn't make that episode, because that's reaching a level of ridiculousness in your – it's no longer even allegory.
It's preachy.
Yeah, and that's – there's that line where it's no longer, look at this weird thing which you can see, which is kind of like an issue we got.
Well, yeah,
but instead, it's like, okay, let's just make them that issue, and boom, and then it's not allegory anymore. It's just, and when you get into deep space and you go, it can be anything weird, why wouldn't it be a planet of men and a planet of women? Or it's like, well, because it doesn't make any sense. That's why it wouldn't be that.
Well, okay. The other problem with that, again, is that we've got this television show that in the beginning is trying to pass itself off as a serious, I was going to say intelligent and thoughtful, but I decided that was a bad choice of words, but at least as an attempt at a serious science fiction show.
I think they still are, even at this point.
No, I don't. No, now this is farcical.
I agree this is a terrible episode, but I don't think that they've yet abandoned their aspirations.
Okay, they have not jumped the shark yet, but boy, are they're just about to hit that ramp.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a difference of an intention. I mean, poor execution as opposed to, say, reaching the point where they just go, you know something? Let's just go for lasers. And then instead of try, because I know later episodes we're going to see that they are still continuing to try to give us thought-provoking material. So I don't think the production crew ever gave up on the concept that they wanted to be highbrow or serious science fiction. I just think that they did not have the skill to do it, and which is a shame because we have had so little good science fiction television over the years that I you know was once looking forward to Star Trek Discovery.
I lost interest in that a long time ago, but that's another story.
We are not going to review that either on episode by episode basis. I'm pretty sure. Anyway, I got nothing else on this. I mean, we've dragged this poor sad episode through the mud. Yeah. At least we've got some good
laughs out of it.
Fourth season Blake 7 coming up. So
oh dear.
Sorry, that's just me laughing through the tears.
yes.
Oh, no, I do have one other thing. Final scene. Coney.
Okay.
What does he do to Dr. Russell? Do you remember?
Doesn't he kiss her?
He doesn't kiss her. He reaches over and he grabs her by the chin and he holds her.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, it's a growing affection between the two.
Is it just that the space babes got him turned on, and since he didn't get any, he's going to go after Dr. Russell here?
Well, they've been hinting at that for some time now.
It just seemed out of place. I mean, particularly after the way he behaved in this episode, she should not be amenable to this behavior. And it just...
This is Helena.
Yeah, that's true. I don't like her, John. I just don't like her.
Really? I can't tell. You have no facial expression.
I don't like her, John. I just can't tell you.
We really like Barbara Bain. We really do. If she were to speak any louder, her face would split.
Oh, dear. Ben, thank you for joining me.
Oh, that was a joy. It's a pleasure, yes.
Listeners, I hope you found some amusement in this episode of Space 1999, or at least the podcast, and I do hope you'll join us all again next time on Fusion
Cheers.
Patrol.
Fusion Patrol is a Lone Locust production. Like us? Please consider becoming our sponsor at patreon.com/fusionpatrol. We'd really appreciate it if you could leave us a review on iTunes. Stop by and visit us at our website, fusionpatrol.com. Search for us on Facebook under Fusion Patrol, check out our Twitter handle at Fusion Patrol, or just send us an email at feedback@fusionpatrol.com. Please come join the conversation. Our music is Fight the Future by Amber Wolf.